The conference finals start tonight, Tuesday night, and we're diving into the Miami Heat with Nikias Duncan here on this Tuesday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainy days back with the vengeance, back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hey there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you're new, if this is the first time, this is a Monday through Friday podcast covering the Celtics. Every game, there's a post-game show. And now, this week, leading up to the conference finals, we've been diving into the Miami Heat, the crossover with the Locked On Heat podcast yesterday. Today, Nikias Duncan of BasketballNews.com. He really gets into deep dives. He's one of the smartest people out there covering the league, and he is very in tune with what the Miami Heat are doing. So I thought it would be great to get a much more in-depth look at what Miami's trying to do, how the Celtics are going to attack that. He's a really great follow at Nikias NBA, N-E-K-I-A-S, Nikias NBA on Twitter. Let's dive into the conversation. It's me, Nikias Duncan, right now. Nikias, thanks for coming back on the show. Really appreciate that. You are knee-deep in what the Miami Heat are doing. So I couldn't think of anybody better to have on to kind of break down some of the things that Miami's doing and doing really well, including a piece that you have. It's actually your pinned tweet about what I really want to start getting into is Miami's offense, how hard they are to guard now. Because of the added three-point shooting and how well Bam Adebayo is running these dribble handoffs with Duncan Robinson, especially.
It's probably the biggest part of what they want to do. Obviously, Miami's two best players are Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler, in whatever order you want to put them in. Both of those guys want to get downhill. So the Heat have smartly added shooters around those three since they put so much pressure on the rim. Bam obviously kind of picking and rolling or operating from the elbows and kind of faking those handoffs and getting downhill. And Jimmy Butler can kind of shoulder his way to the rim whenever he wants to. So having kind of like an east-west threat in Duncan Robinson that can kind of flow off those dribble handoffs and pull off the dribble, pull over contest, it just makes things very difficult for defenses. And I think that's why the Robinson Adebayo handoff in particular has been so dangerous, because you can't give Robinson a sliver of space or he'll fire. And if you do kind of show two to the ball on that, Robinson has improved enough as a passer to hit Bam on those slips. And then Bam can attack the basket, and he's a good enough passer to kind of abuse those advantage situations. If it's a 4-on-3 or 3-on-2, he can make the right read there. So once Miami puts your defense into rotation, they have smart ball movers. They have spot-up shooters that can kind of bury you if you let them get hot. So it just kind of makes things very difficult for defenses.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out what the best way to combat that would be. And the best thing I can think of is just to basically switch everything and not allow for those handoffs to, you know, you see guys chasing over the top, and you certainly can't play a drop coverage against that, because – we've seen them pick that apart. So you're going to have to stay up on Duncan Robinson to keep him from shooting, but that opens you up to, you know, slipping the screen, to opens you up to backdoor cuts, which we see that they can do very well also. And Bam Adebayo operating out of the elbow can really hurt you. But I think the Celtics' best option would be to switch everything. Do you think that would be something that would work against what Miami does?
I think with Bam in particular, I think the switch is going to be your best option, because he can score over mismatches, but he isn't comfortable doing so. He's much more comfortable kind of operating as a passer. If he does get those 4-on-3s, he's looking for those kickouts more than he's looking to kind of overpower the weak side help. So I think you can switch those actions, kind of flatten that out. Duncan Robinson isn't a serious dribble drive threat. If you do switch out like Daniel Tice or Robert Williams, if he's in the game, if you switch that and put a big on Robinson, he's not going to burn you off the dribble. And Adebayo is still trying to find his way in terms of being like an isolation scorer or a mismatch hunter. So I think you switch those actions, kind of flatten Miami out and force them into late clock isolations.
Yeah, see, this kind of supports what I've kind of come to as far as picking a poison in this series, that I want to force Bam Adebayo to be a scorer, but like an individual scorer. Not like, I mean, obviously, if Bam Adebayo scores 20 points, he can get it in any number of ways. If he's getting it off of these pick and rolls and running to the rim and getting lobs, that's not great. But if you're switching and you're creating a one-on-one situation and forcing him to create for himself, I think that's the Celtics' best option here. I know a lot of Celtics fans say that they're not really worried about Miami. I kind of am, because of how many options they have. I'm afraid of their shooters. I think their shooters can turn a close game into a 16-point game like in a blink. And I'm trying to figure out every way I can to not allow that to happen. Obviously, you want to take away Jimmy Butler's drives because he's going to live it at the line. So you don't want to get him fouling Celtics out and getting to the rim. That's obvious. You don't want those shooters to burn you. So what's left? And I think Bam Adebayo, if you can turn him into a guy that has to go into what you say is his most uncomfortable thing, being a one-on-one scorer, I think that's the Celtics' best chance defensively.
Yeah, I think it's going to be it. Because, again, Miami, their offense is predicated on a lot of off-ball movement. They want to go east to west and kind of bend your defense that way, and then they go downhill versus the inverse. So I think if you kind of flatten out those actions that they like to get to, those dribble handoffs, they like to run a little bit of pistol action if they're going in semi-transition, kind of get the guard going downhill that way. If you can switch that and keep a body in front at all times, it makes Miami an isolation team, and they don't have a lot of isolation threats that you can trust. Again, Jimmy Butler can get downhill when he wants to, but those are inherently difficult looks that he's going to because he isn't a really great shooter. Goran Dragic has been good in isolation all year long, but that's a lot of burden on him against a switchable, rangy defense like Boston has. Tyler Hero has a little bit of shake, but that's a lot of trust to put into a rookie. Obviously, he isn't scared of that opportunity. But if you're relying on Tyler Hero to kind of carry you in the Eastern Conference Finals, then that's indicative of the spot that you're in as an offense.
Yeah, the only downside here is now Kemba Walker. And how do you think the Heat can attack Kemba? If we're switching everything in Boston now, and I think the obvious move would be like, all right, let's hunt Kemba on these switches and see what we can get.
I think that's going to be, in terms of mismatch hunting, that's going to be number one for Miami. What makes that so tough is that Boston, if they're not the best team in the league at scram switching, they're definitely top three or so.
Yeah.
They know how to get Kemba out of those situations. So it's going to be up to Miami to be decisive when they do get those switches. Boston's going to be a little hesitant to switch that. You'll probably see a lot of hedge and recover with him, and you have to kind of force Miami to make quick decisions. Jimmy Butler can do that. Goran Dragic has kind of struggled making those quick passes to the slipping man. So you can probably afford to put two to the ball against Miami. But they're definitely going to try to hunt Kemba. If they can get him on the block at all, I think they're going to try to get to that as quickly as they can.
Yeah. How has Spoelstra really reshaped this offense, and especially with Jay Crowder now? I mean, I think the Crowder addition, especially Crowder and Iguodala for sure, but Crowder especially has been really great. And you know, Crowder is able to defend, but also he's hitting like 40% of his threes in the playoffs, and I think it was 45% of his threes since coming to Miami. That's a ridiculous number. It's the best shooting of his life. How has that reshaped Miami's offense?
In terms of the offense, I think getting Jay Crowder in instead of Myers Leonard has made them a little bit more prolific just from a volume standpoint. The current starting lineup I mean, they have Goran Dragic starting this postseason instead of Kendrick Nunn, who has struggled since being in the bubble. But early in the regular season, it was, you know, Nunn at point guard, Myers Leonard at center. And they kind of had Myers Leonard operating as a pick and pop guy, this guy that kind of spreads the floor, takes a couple of threes per game, could drag your big man out, but he wasn't a guy that was going to shoot enough to really break your defense. They're not guarding Jay Crowder the same way, but the fact that Jay Crowder is willing to put up 7, 8, 9, he's averaging, I think, 10 three-point attempts during the postseason, in addition to that 40% clip, it just opens things up. Even if you don't treat him like you treat Duncan Robinson, just having a guy that's willing to fire that much kind of forces your defense to cheat over to him, and that helps open up some of the stuff on the other side of the floor.
My conversation with Nikias continues in just a moment. If you have a car and you need something for it, do not go to one of those chain stores that you'll see out in a strip mall somewhere. Go to rockauto.com because you can save time, you can save money, you can save a lot of hassle. Rockauto.com has fair prices. They do not have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. That's silly, but other places do. Rock Auto does not. They're the same prices for everybody, and they are reliably low. If you go to one of those chain stores or a dealer, why would you do that? You could spend 30 to 50 to 100% more on what you're buying for your car. For example, there's a fuel pump assembly for a Honda Odyssey that you can get at Advance for $354 at Rock Auto, $217. That's a lot of money that you're saving that you can spend on something else, or you can put it away. You can use it on something fun. So go to rockauto.com. They're a family business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Their catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. You can see all the parts that are available for your vehicle. You can choose the brands, the specs, the prices, all of that stuff on rockauto.com. If you go there right now, write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. rockauto.com, and write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. It's very important. It's an amazing selection. Reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. That's kind of nuts that he's taking 10 threes a game. I've seen it, 10, 11. I think he has 12 in one of these games. That's for Jay Crowder. That really is like symbolic of how this NBA era works, because Jay Crowder taking 12 threes, even back when he was in Boston, if Jay Crowder took 12 threes, people would have been like losing their minds. But now that's all he shoots. So he takes 10 shots a game. They're all three pointers. That's like you said, that puts a lot of pressure. You know, he's going to hit a few, and even if he's not shooting 40%, even if he shoots 30%, he still hit that. That's still, you know, 9 points out of him that you have to be prepared for. It's kind of nuts. The shooting for Miami is just, this is something that I think is going to be the biggest, I guess, transition from the Toronto series, where the Raptors were just cold, couldn't hit a thing. If the Celtics allow Miami to get some of the shots that they gave up to Toronto, that I think is going to make it a long series for Boston. Although, obviously, you're defending the two teams differently, but to have Robinson, to have Hero, and let's talk about Hero, because he's a rookie, but he's playing like out of his mind.
Oh yeah, he has been. I mean, he's been nothing short of fantastic, honestly. He had a couple of stinkers in the Milwaukee series. I mean, of course he would with the perimeter defenders that Milwaukee has. But even in some of his bad games, particularly the game 4, I think he was probably the worst player on the floor. But then there he was hitting 2 or 3 huge shots at the end of that game. So the fact that he's fearless gives Miami a punch that they need, especially with a guy like Bam Adebayo being a little hesitant sometimes. Jimmy Butler, he isn't hesitant, but he likes to be a little pass first, at least early in games, try to set other guys up. Tyler Hero is a guy that's just going to go get his. And I think Miami needs that decisiveness in playoff situations sometimes, and Hero has that. Beyond that, the game is kind of slowed down for him. He's making better passing reads out of pick and roll. He's doing a better job of getting to the basket. That's been the biggest change for him since he's entered the bubble. He's getting to the rim a lot more, getting to the free throw line more. And that's helping him set up what he wants to get to. Those step backs or those pull-ups in the mid-range once he snakes around a pick and pick and roll. Those step back jumpers if he draws the big out. He's doing a better job of setting up his jumper. And that in combination with the passing ability that he has just makes him a lethal offensive threat.
What about Jimmy Butler? Well, I've done two podcasts on Miami, and we really haven't talked about Jimmy Butler much. He's a weird kind of player because he may not be the best player in this series, but then the fourth quarter rolls around, or the last 5 minutes of a fourth quarter roll around, and he looks like the best player in the league. Like, what is it about Jimmy Butler how does he flip a switch like that?
I mean, the intangible stuff is kind of cliche, but honestly, I mean, he's just not scared of the moment. He kind of has that feel for when it's his time to take things over. I think that's why he's been so good for this particular Miami team, because they've given a lot of minutes to a lot of young players. Again, Kendrick Nunn's kind of out of the rotation now, but he started for Miami all year long. Tyler Hero, obviously. Duncan Robinson becoming the first-time starter after barely playing last year. He's done a lot to empower those guys on and off the floor. But he still has the ability to sense when he needs to take over. We saw that last year in Philadelphia. Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons were obviously the big names in Philadelphia. They had the longevity there. But at the end of playoff games, they were going to Butler because he can make things happen. The jumper obviously isn't great, but he's able to get downhill in a way that not many players in the league can, despite that. Nifty driver, can get guys off balance, can draw fouls that way, gives himself some easy points. And then once you get into a rhythm, he can knock down those pull-up mid-range jumpers. That's a thing that teams want to give up, especially when they're playing drop. If he can get into those shots late in games, he can knock those down. And that helps open up the drive even more. And he also has the passing chops to hit guys if they kind of collapse on him. So he has done a great job of kind of balancing when to be a scorer, when to be a passer, picking out the space that he needs to attack. And as we saw last series, like, he can be the best player on the floor no matter who he's defending.
Yeah, the defense is going to be maybe the difference here. You got two good defensive teams. Miami significantly improved their defense with the addition of Crowder, with the addition of Iguodala, I think, because I'm looking at what the Celtics did to the Heat in the regular season prior to the seeding game. The two games that they had there, I mean, they were attacking Robinson and Hero. They were attacking weaknesses on the wing that they'll still, obviously Duncan Robinson's going to be out there and a guy that can be attacked defensively, but there's the shoring up of the wing defense is a big deal. And it's going to be interesting to see what Jay Crowder can do to Jason Tatum in a series, or if they decide to switch and have, you know, other guys take turns on Tatum and Brown and eventually Hayward when he comes back. But I think Miami shoring up that wing defense. And not only that, now they had a training camp again to kind of hammer home some of the things that they wanted to do. It's not like a regular midseason acquisition where you're learning on the fly and going into the playoffs and hoping that you're hitting a high note there. They've had so much time to learn, hammer home the concepts that Miami's trying to accomplish on the defensive end. And this is now a much better defensive team than what Boston has faced in the regular season.
I think the additions of Iguodala and Crowder have been huge. Miami was primarily a drop team this year up until the trade deadline. Once they got those two in there, they switched at a top five rate. So being able to switch has kind of alleviated some of the point of attack defensive issues that they had all year. They've just been doing a better job of keeping guys in front and then kind of digging down on drives, rotating over if they need to, and then kind of switching after that. So I think they've been able to kind of close up a lot of those loose ends, and that's helped them tighten up the defense. And once they're able to force those misses, I mean, with them playing so small, they have four or five guys that can take a rebound and do it and give you a couple of dribbles before passing off or whatever. You can kind of attack from everywhere in transition now. And then they can kind of flow into those dribble handoffs that they like to do. Once the defense is scrambled, they're doing a great job of kind of picking out those advantages. So I think adding those two guys has definitely helped. I think it's going to help them in this series against Boston, because if they had the same roster, had the same construction, and they were still trying to run drop, this could be a series where Kemba Walker just absolutely dismantles them. And it still can be, because Kemba's that good. But I do think Miami's more equipped to handle what Boston wants to do offensively now, because they switch more.
Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. I'm just looking at the Miami defensive metrics. I know Brad Stevens doesn't like to talk about defensive metrics, but you know, we kind of have to. you know, they're fourth in opponent effective field goal percentage in the playoffs. They're eighth, middle of the pack in forcing opponent turnovers. But you know, Boston is worse at forcing turnovers. Boston's the best team at the opponent's effective field goal percentage. So really, it's going to be just a battle of who can get their shooters off, probably. But Miami is top five in a lot of offensive metrics. Boston is not. Boston is below fifth in a lot of these offensive metrics, which, look, they faced a Philly team that, despite their shortcomings, were still defending and made it tough, versus Miami facing an Indiana team that was a little bit easier to score on. They got going against a Milwaukee defense that wasn't designed to be successful against what Miami did. This is their right. That was their one kryptonite. So some of these numbers could be, you know, it's a small sample size, but you know, you still have to go out there and do it. So I think Boston's defense is going to have a hard time. And if the Celtics can't get Kemba Walker going, then I think that's going to make it really, really tough, because I don't think the Celtics can win without Kemba Walker having big games against the Miami Heat. What do you see as far as being the keys for this series for both teams?
I think you pretty much hit it on the head. I think it's going to be getting Kemba Walker downhill, because I think that's the one guy that the Heat don't really have a good answer for. Obviously, no one would argue that Jay Crowder is better than Jason Tatum at all. But Jay Crowder has the strength and has the size to match up with Jason Tatum. To where if Tatum scores, he's going to have to at least work for it a little bit. And right. The same thing would be said for Jaylen Brown, if you're putting Jimmy Butler on him or however Miami wants to cross-match that. With Kemba Walker, the Heat don't have a point guard on the roster that can defend him. Goran Dragic can't do it. Kendrick Nunn can't do it. And matter of fact, before we got to the bubble, you saw a lot of Derrick Jones Jr. guarding Kemba Walker, just because he has the length to kind of bother him over those screens. So he's the one guy that can kind of dictate terms. You might see Miami put Jimmy Butler on him to start. Maybe that's a way to kind of take away some of those dribble drives that Kemba Walker wants to get into. But he's the guy that can unlock what everything else for Boston. So I think if he gets going, then Miami's going to be scrambling. Even if they are switching, that's going to put them in scramble situations, and they kind of drive and kick from there, and that's going to generate some good looks for Boston, and they can all get into a flow there. On the other end of the coin, if Miami can spring Duncan Robinson open, that's going to open up a lot of those that's going to open up a lot of opportunities for everyone else. I think Duncan Robinson is going to be the one guy that's going to unlock driving windows for Bam, unlock driving windows for Jimmy Butler. Miami's obviously going to have, in those situations, they're going to have like Jay Crowder or Goran Dragic kind of spotting up in the corners for those easy kickouts. So if you can get Boston shifting a little bit and then get downhill, there are going to be some really easy looks for Miami to have. It's going to be kind of similar to what Toronto saw. They were able to generate a lot of good looks, just couldn't knock them down. Miami has better shooters and can take advantage of that. So I think that's going to be the key, just kind of get – both of these teams have to get downhill and force the other team to rotate.
How much of a difference do you think Gordon Hayward's going to make when he comes back?
I think even if he's 80% of himself, that's going to put Miami in a bind. Because I think as presently constructed, you can kind of hide a Goran Dragic on a Marcus Smart if you need to. If you're swapping out Marcus Smart with Gordon Hayward,
there's a size advantage there for Boston. There's also a skill advantage for Boston there. Another guy that can dribble, shoot, pass, can create his own shot, can create for others. And I just don't think Miami has the ability to match up with that while without sacrificing their offense. And they're already going to have a lot of half-court questions just because of the lack of isolation threats against Boston switching. So I think if Hayward comes back, Miami can throw out Andre Iguodala, give him more minutes. They can give Derrick Jones Jr. more minutes. But those are both guys that you can kind of ignore, even if you slide them in the corner. And if you're running pick and rolls there with those guys in the corners, Boston has done a great job all year of kind of tagging the role man and rotating out. And that's just going to cramp Miami's offense even more. So I think Hayward returning would be huge, even if he isn't giving you a consistent 18 or 20 points. Just his presence alone is going to make Boston more difficult to defend.
Here's where I think Miami has done Boston a little bit of a favor. Because the East playoffs have ended so soon, like, and it's just, only Boston went to a seven game. The West playoffs are behind. So there's some talk about that we're going to go through every other day, game one, two, and three. But I saw, I think it was Tim Reynolds of the AP say that there's a possibility of between game three and game four, potentially two or three days off between those games, just so the West can catch up. So I think Miami getting rid of Milwaukee early and not extending that series actually gives Boston an extra few days to get Hayward back. If he's not back before game three, then those extra few days get him back for a game four versus what might have been a game six or a game seven even. So that could be a big difference in this series. That between that and actually the, you know, the protests that shut down the league briefly for what was 3 or 4 days, the combination of those things give Gordon Hayward essentially an extra week to recover. So the timing of this is much different than what we thought, where maybe Gordon Hayward wasn't going to be back until the maybe NBA finals. Now he could come back in the middle of this series. And even if it's 2-1 Miami, there's time for Hayward to kind of come back and make this difference and change the entire tenor of the series, games 4 through 7.
Right. And even if Boston decides to bring him back slowly, the one hole you can kind of poke at them is a lack of creation off the bench, especially with Marcus Smart starting. Brad Wanamaker has looked pretty good to me during the postseason. But adding Gordon Hayward to kind of help anchor those second units, if you're taking Kemba or Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown off the floor, just having like two of those guys that can help kind of create why the stars get rest, that's going to close a gap that Miami would be looking to attack, since they have got like Tyler Hero that's been so great off the bench this postseason. So just the presence of Hayward is going to change a lot of this series.
Yeah, I think so too. That could be the difference right there. Nikias, I am worried about this series from a Boston perspective. This Miami Heat team is tough. I think especially in Boston are underrating them a little bit because Boston handled them so easily during the regular season. Prior to the bubble, I wouldn't have thought anything of Miami. Even if they had made this same run, I would have been much more dismissive. But like I said before, the addition of Crowder and Iguodala and the time that they've had to integrate them and just get even better makes it, I think this is going to be a really good series. I thought as good as the Toronto series was, this one could be better. This one could go seven. How do you think this could go?
I think it's going to be a pretty tight series either way. If you go super conservative, Eric Spoelstra and Brad Stevens are two of the top six coaches in the league. So I think them having versatile rosters and them just being great in their own right, we're going to see a lot of funky adjustments, I feel like. Wouldn't be surprised if we still see Jaylen Brown guarding Bam Adebayo from tip. That was the thing Boston went to during the regular season. Mm-hmm. While Miami was still starting two bigs, you could have Daniel Tice kind of floating around with Kelly Olynyk since he's mobile enough to do that. And you have a small on Bam Adebayo, so you can kind of switch those dribble handoffs or whatever you want to do there. So I wouldn't be surprised if Brad Stevens still goes to that same thing, even with Miami being smaller now. I think it's definitely going to be an adjustment series. It's going to be a shot making series. I mean, as cliche as it is, it's a make or miss league. So it's going to be up to those spot up guys for on either side making shots. And it's going to be swung on who can get downhill enough to kind of generate those open looks, because both of these teams are defending at a very high level right now.
Yep. I don't even want to make a prediction. I don't even want to. I mean, I think just for the sake of my listeners, I'll say Celtics in seven, but this is shaping up to be, I think this is going to be just an epic matchup. This is going to be, it's going to test everybody. Players, coaches, it's going to be amazing to watch just the talent on the floor, but how they adjust, what do they do? How do they change who's on the floor and when, and the styles that they play? It's going to be a lot of fun. And I really appreciate you coming on to offer a lot of really great insight, into the Miami Heat. This is, I think, important stuff for Celtics fans to know. So appreciate it. Anything you want to plug before you go?
I just dropped basically a Heat scouting report on how to defend Boston. Within the next couple of hours, I am going to have a similar piece on how Boston can defend Miami. So be on the lookout for that at basketballnews.com. Other than that, follow my Twitter account for basketball analysis and puns at Nekias NBA, NEKIASNBA.
All right. Nekias is a great follow. Very, very smart. One of the smartest basketball people out there. So make sure you follow him. Nekias, thank you for coming on. Appreciate it.
No problem, man. Anytime.
There's a lot of information in that conversation. And I think it's really great stuff. A lot of things to look for when you're watching this game. Like I said, Nekias is great. You can follow those two pieces that he just told you about. Check those out. Follow him on Twitter. You will not regret it. He breaks things down at a very high level, and you can really get into the nitty-gritty of what's happening in this series. It's going to be a great series. I know it's going to be a great series. This is going to be a lot of fun for people who aren't fans of both teams. It's going to be stressful for those Celtics fans and Heat fans out there, that it's going to be a tough one. This is going to be a battle. The team that comes out of this series is going to earn it. Guarantee you that. Thanks for listening. If you are a new listener, like I said before, please subscribe to the show. You can get it wherever podcasts exist. You can follow it on Spotify. You can follow me on Twitter if you haven't, Reds Army_John, or follow the show at LO Celtics on Twitter. Twitter is my main form of social media communication, so that's where you're going to find me mostly. Regular listeners, you know what I'm looking for, 5-star ratings and good written review, because that really, really helps. The numbers for the podcast lately have been off the charts, so I really thank you all for listening. All of the new listeners who have subscribed, thank you very much for sharing the podcast. Tell everybody, when they ask about a podcast that they should be listening to covering the Boston Celtics, tell them that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.